The next case on today's call is number 06-1740, Young against the Attorney General. That case, by order of the court, has been submitted on the briefs. We'll therefore go to the sixth case of the morning, which is number 06-2101, Terezov against the Attorney General. Good morning, Mr. Finch.
Morning, Your Honors. Please, the court. I'm Ron Finch. I'm an attorney from Phoenix. And I'm the attorney for the plaintiff. This is an immigration case. My client filed an affirmative I-589 application asking for asylum, withholding of removal, and relief under the Convention Against Torture. He filed affirmatively when he was living in Phoenix, and the application went to the Los Angeles Asylum Office. Very briefly, my plaintiff is from Bulgaria. His ethnic group is Gypsy and Roma. He suffered past persecution in Bulgaria, and because of his ethnic group, he has a reasonable and well-founded fear of persecution in the future if he is forced to return to Bulgaria.
Mr. Finch, is there any evidence in the record as to what the April and August 2004 letters could have been if not change of address notifications?
I believe they were change of address notifications, Your Honor, both to the California Service Center, one with respect to an employment authorization document, but also with respect to his affirmative asylum application. And he provided notice. He moved to Carmel, Indiana for 4 months looking for a job. And I believe the record reflects that he advised the asylum office that he was now living in Indiana. He was there for 4 months, Your Honor. He could not find employment, moved back to Phoenix, and gave notice again to the asylum office, I'm now living in Phoenix. And so I think he did everything reasonable and prudent to give the California Asylum Office where he was living. What did happen, Your Honor, was when he moved to Indiana for 4 months and he provided that notice, the Los Angeles Asylum Office sent his package to Chicago. And he was never advised of that, and I don't think would have had a reasonable knowledge that it occurred in Chicago, in the Indiana for a short period of time, still assuming his application was pending in Los Angeles. When he got back to Phoenix, within 4 months, he gave them the Los Angeles Asylum Office, here is my correct and current address in Los Angeles. They never notified him, hey, in that window, we sent your application to Chicago. Chicago then used an Indiana address to advise him of an affirmative interview. He never got that notice. He didn't report. And because he didn't report, his case was referred to Chicago Immigration Court. And then about a year later, Chicago issued an NTA and a hearing notice, and he never got it because he was living in Phoenix and assuming all communication would come from Los Angeles. So it's really a factual issue, and I believe under the law, Your Honor, my client did everything reasonable and prudent to keep the asylum office informed of his address.
Now, tell me this, please. Were the affidavits from the wife, the friend, and the landlord introduced in a timely manner? And were they considered by the BIA?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
And that really is the heart of the issue. Did he take reasonable steps to give notice? I think he did. But because of the moves, he wound up in Chicago or in Indiana, and he never got notice from the Chicago Asylum Office when he didn't show for the hearing. The judge in Chicago, and he never got the notice to appear, the NTA from the Chicago judge or hearing notice. He didn't know he needed to appear, so he wasn't there, and he had not hired a lawyer. And so it's really, I think, about did he give proper notice? And I think he did. And the in absentia order is just fundamentally unfair and violates due process, and he should be allowed to have his case heard by an immigration judge on the merits. And that's really our argument, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning.
Mr. Smith.
Lyle Smith on behalf of the government.
Mr. Smith, they always give you the hard ones.
It appears that way.
let me... okay, here's what I need to know. Doesn't the certified mail return receipt establish that something was mailed by Mr. Tarozov in April and August 2004? And how can the government contradict the testimony that it was a change of address that was sent, given the absence of any evidence in the record as to what else it could have been? You know, given that the administrative record here is lacking many documents, including the asylum interview notice, and the documents sent by certified mail in April and August 2004, why shouldn't that be construed against the government rather than against Mr. Tarozov?
I think the problem, and the board's problem, found that the problem in this case, the board's problem, is that we don't know what this return receipt card is for, and it would be the board would not want to speculate, or the IJ, as to what it is. We just don't know. We have no idea what the return receipt refers to. It could possibly be a change of address notice. It could be something else. We just don't know. But the other problem, as the board found, is that there's no evidence in the record of this change of address notice, a letter indicating that he moved back to Phoenix. There's nothing in the record to show that.
But what evidence is there that the interview notice was even mailed to him? If there's no evidence of such a notice, wouldn't that provide an independent basis for setting aside the in absentia order of removal?
I don't think so. I think because the standard is to rescind the in absentia order of removal, the petitioner has to show that he failed to receive notice, and under the law, proof of actual service of receipt of the notice is not required to establish proper notice. In order to show proper notice in these cases, the government only has to show that notice was mailed to the last known address of the alien. In this case, the last known address, based on the record, the last known address was the Carmel, Indiana address. The only letter or notice of change of address in the record, if you look at the record, the only notice of change of address is the one showing that the petitioner moved to Indiana. That's the last known address. There's nothing else to show when he moved back to Phoenix. That's just not part of the record. That's the problem in this case.
Well, help me with this. In July 2004, he receives a decision on his application for employment authorization, and that indicated that his asylum application was then located at the Los Angeles Asylum Office. Why would it still be there in July if they believed he had moved in January, unless they had received the April notification that he was back in Phoenix? I'm Alice in Wonderland.
Are you referring to the California Service Center or the Asylum Office? Because those are different, entirely different components of DHS.
Well, the Los Angeles Asylum Office.
Right. The only, from my review of the record, the only documents coming from the asylum office are those that are going to his Indiana address. If you're talking about the California Service Center, he did raise an argument, I believe it was before the board. I don't think he has raised the argument now for the court, that the California Service Center had sent him documents regarding employment authorization after he moved to Phoenix. The problem is that the California Service Center deals with employment authorization. The asylum office does not deal with employment authorization. They are two different components. And so if the California Service Center was aware of his new address in Phoenix, the asylum office is not necessarily automatically going to be aware that there's a new address that the California Service Center has. The petitioner has to provide notice to the asylum office. The California Service Center does not issue the NTAs. The asylum office, in this case, would have issued the NTA. Therefore, it would be incumbent upon the petitioner to provide notice to the asylum office, provide notice of his change of address. But the bottom line in this case is, yes, there's a return receipt card. We don't know what it refers to. That's all we have. We don't have the actual letter or notice of the change of address to the asylum office. The only change of address notice we have in this case, as the board noted, is the change of address to Indiana, the letter indicating that he moved to Carmel, Indiana. That's the last known address that the asylum office had. Therefore, they mailed notice to appear to that address. Under those circumstances, the petitioner cannot show that he failed to receive notice when notice was mailed to the last known address that he provided, based on the review of the record. The problem in this case, there is no evidence in the record to show that petitioner had notified the asylum office of any change of address after he returned to Phoenix. And, the only evidence that shows that he notified the asylum office is, again, the January 23rd, 2004, the letter that the agency received on January 23rd, 2004, showing that he had moved to Indiana. The absence of reliable evidence in this case does not help the petitioner show. The petitioner cannot show, in light of the absence of reliable evidence of the new change of address, that change of address to the new address in Phoenix, petitioner cannot show that it was an abuse of discretion for the IJ to deny reopening in this case.
Oh, Mr. Smith. I see.
But for me, the magic words are no evidence. I mean, there's basically nothing in this file. And I have the same concerns as Judge Rovner, because there's no documentation showing he was notified, as she said, about the interview or that where it was and when it was to take place. Nothing's in the record. I mean, that to me is very problematic, and we're penalizing him when because of the shoddy record keeping of the government, basically.
I believe in the record, I think there should be evidence to show that the asylum office notified him of the asylum interview, or perhaps I'd have to look at the record again. I thought there was the asylum notice was part of the record. What we do have in the record is the change of address notice that the agency received.
Well, it shows that it was scheduled.
Right.
But it didn't show that it had taken place, obviously it didn't take place because he wasn't there, but.
Is the court referring to the asylum interview notice or the NTA?
The interview notice.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but the NTA, another thing I'd like to raise it's important, is that the NTA was mailed to the Indiana address, which is the last known address that the agency had, according to the record. There's no evidence that that was returned in the mail by the United States Postal Service.
But then why was he told that his asylum application was located in Los Angeles? If his last known address is Indiana, it would have been Chicago. It is a mess.
The Los Angeles Asylum Office is the office that had jurisdiction over his asylum application, because that's where he initially filed it. I believe that's the case. That's why the Los Angeles LA Asylum Office had his application. However, his NTA was issued in Chicago because he had moved to Indiana, and that's the last known address, which is within the jurisdiction of the Chicago Immigration Court. That would explain why you have those two different, why the Los Angeles office would have issued the NTA in the Chicago Immigration Court.
Oh, boy.
If the court doesn't have any other questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. How much time does counsel have? You have 5 minutes left, sir.
Your Honor, I do have to respectfully disagree with the attorney for the government. I do believe that the record indicates that there was an affirmative application when my client lived in Phoenix. He moved for a short period of time to Indiana looking for work. He did provide the asylum office with that change of address, but it was for a very short period of time. When he couldn't find work, he moved back to Phoenix, Your Honor, and I believe he took every reasonable step to notify both the California Service Center on the employment side and the asylum office that his now new current address was Phoenix, Arizona. And I believe that he actually had some assurances from Los Angeles that his paperwork and applications were pending there. He continued to follow up, but the reality is the Los Angeles Asylum Office never advised him, we are now transferring your affirmative application to Chicago. He was never told that. He was never aware of it. He never got a hearing notice from the Chicago Asylum Office when he and a lawyer didn't show up for that hearing. Naturally, it got referred to Chicago Immigration Court. He had no knowledge or notice that he was in Chicago Immigration Court. And when he didn't appear at a master hearing in Chicago, when he didn't appear and did not appear with a lawyer, he was removed in absentia. And we just believe that he never was given proper notice, Your Honor, and that he did everything a reasonable and prudent person could do under the law to let the Los Angeles Asylum Office know he was still living in Phoenix. And he could have had no knowledge that in that short window of period of time, and he was not told, your application's now moved to Chicago. So we feel he did everything reasonable and prudent to keep them advised that he was once again living in Phoenix, and he did not get notice, and that it really, you know, violates fundamental fairness and due process for him to have been ordered removed in absentia, especially when he has a strong asylum case. And we're talking about past persecution in the possibility of future persecution, all and not being given a chance fairly to present in open court the merits of his asylum claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Finch. And indeed, our thanks to both Mr. Finch and Mr. Smith for their presentations, and the case will be taken under advisement.